Manipulation of the mind, emotions, and physical health of people through new applied technologies continues to draw the attention of military planners around the world. Best-selling author, lecturer Dr. Nick Begich. Tonight on Coast to Coast, we'll talk about some most startling advances in this area of technology for military and private sector uses. Mind control in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Nick Begich is the eldest son of the late United States Congressman from Alaska, Nick Begich Sr., who died in a plane crash in Alaska, and political activist Peggy Begich. He is well known in Alaska for his own political activities as well. He has twice been elected president of both the Alaska Federation of Teachers and the Anchorage Council of Education. He has been pursuing independent research in the sciences and politics for most of his adult life. Begich received his doctorate in traditional medicine from the Open International University for Complementary Medicines in November of 1994. He is the editor of Earth Pulse Flashpoints, a new science book series. Begich has served as an expert witness and speaker before the European Parliament and has spoken on various issues for groups representing citizen concerns, statesmen and elected officials, scientists, and others. He's a regular contributing guest here on Coast to Coast AM. And Nick, what is an expert in HAARP now doing looking into mind control?
Well, you know, this is, from my perspective, perhaps one of the biggest issues. You know, the whole area of new technologies, which, you know, HAARP was really our first big foray into, you know, bringing issues of that were important technologically to the public. And as part of that, you know, one of the issues with HAARP was the ability of this system, because of its generation of extremely low frequency signals, to actually interfere with human brain performance, something that we've talked about on the program in the past. And when we began to look at this issue and then began to collect what we considered initially just sort of ancillary materials, we began to see a trend. And this trend in the last, well, the last 11 years, we put together approximately 300 source documents, most of them military records and academic studies, showing sort of the trail of this technology. And right now, major and significant initiatives to try and develop tools and resources for military applications in this area.
Now, when we talk about mind control, exactly what are we talking about?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it. You know, there's certainly the darker side of it, which, you know, we're going to cover some of that tonight. And then there's the brighter side of it, you know, how some of this technology might be used to enhance human performance for the opposite end of the spectrum. But on this particular issue of mind control, what we're talking about is being able to artificially influence or direct or control activities within an individual or group of human brains. And the idea of manipulating behavior, the idea of manipulating emotions, all of these kinds of things show up in the literature. And again, the big concern that I have is looking at when is it right to use technologies, and when is it absolutely wrong to use technologies? And in this particular area and areas related to the impact on humanity of technologies, that's really the focus of our work over the next, what we see as a foreseeable future, for sure the next 4 or 5 years. We're pretty much committed to this issue and the related issues because we think it's the most invasive technology on the planet today, and being contemplated for uses that most, I think most rational people would strongly disagree with.
Nick, has this been going on for a long time, the issue of mind control?
Oh, absolutely. If you go back, in fact, let's kind of talk a little bit about, you know, sort of where all this started. You know, if you go way back, you have to go back to the Korean conflict, and the returning prisoners of war from the Korean conflict displayed very bizarre behaviors, total personality changes, ideological changes, big changes in these folks. And so after the war, we began to look at this, and the phrase brainwashing was actually coined back then in the early 50s. This then became kind of an interest area for our intelligence community in the United States because it was obvious that it was profound in its impact. So a lot of work was done through the 50s into the 60s. Eventually, in the early 70s, much of that was disclosed in congressional inquiries surrounding the MKUltra project and the rest of the projects surrounding that cluster. And these were the use primarily of chemical agents, LSD and hallucinogenics and the like that were used on American service personnel, on other disadvantaged individuals and people around the country as experimental guinea pigs, and they got caught.
Nick, did the former Soviet Union have anything to do with our push to get into this field?
Absolutely. In fact, the understanding of sort of how to affect the brain, if you go back even further, back sort of before the 70s, you go back into the early part of the Vietnam conflict. In the 60s, middle 60s, we captured a device that was a Soviet device called the LIDA machine. L-I-D-A is how it's spelled. And it was a Soviet device that was used for putting prisoners of war into trance-like states for extracting intelligence. And it used light and flickering light and sound and electromagnetic fields is what has been reported to do that. And this is an area that really did not make much noise when MK Ultra was revealed. It was mainly the chemical side, but the Russians were long before we were engaged, at least in the public record, very interested in these issues and had been pursuing them. In fact, in the late 60s, many will remember the microwave bombardment of the U.S. Embassy.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Some said, hey, that was all about surveillance. Today, when we look back on what was happening and analyze what was happening, it was most likely trying to affect emotional states of people within the embassy by using pulsed microwave signals for disrupting brain function. And this is something that's been experimentally demonstrated as possible within the laboratory environment.
We have, and as we open up the phone lines later on tonight, Nick, we may get some calls from people who believe that they are being bombarded with these kinds of signals, and not only from maybe their neighbors, but some other kinds of government sources.
Well, you know, we hear from folks all the time, and you know, in the last couple of years, you know, we have been become very concerned about the misapplication of technology, and you know, and that concern, because of what can happen, is really, I think, probably the most important technical issue out there. You know, would they do this? Could they do this? The answers to all those questions are yes, they can. Yes, they would. When you look at victims of human experimentation in the United States, over 500,000 Americans, according to Secretary of Energy O'Leary when she was in that position of the Clinton administration, were victims of non-consensual experiments over a 40-year period that involved everything from the MK-Ultra projects of mind control to injecting black Americans in the Southeast with syphilis to see how they would die over their lifetimes. The idea that 500,000 Americans have been victimized in this way, the idea that perhaps there are victims of this technology, I absolutely believe there are. We hear from a great number of people and have over the years. It's tough for us to sort out, you know, which ones are potentially victims of this type of technology and which ones might have other issues going on. But we see certain patterns emerge. And, you know, when you look at the history of this country, and in the acknowledgement of experiments in this area already, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that this type of technology is being used in this way. And the sad story is it's a very difficult one to detect when you look at what kinds of ways they can deliver on this promise of being able to manipulate human behavior in this way.
You know, in the past, other than this Russian machine, this LIDA machine, I would have assumed that our push for mind control then was based primarily on hypnosis and some other non-technological ways.
Sure. The idea of hypnosis, putting the mind in a highly suggestive state so that you can, you know, manipulate behavior, you know, that's certainly there. That's been around a long time. You know, people have said, oh, you can't really make someone do something they don't want to do, but you can create illusions that actually create exactly those outcomes, things that people really didn't plan on doing. The other thing, though, that goes much further is the idea of the brain being able to be manipulated by external fields. This is an area of extensive research by military planners. In fact, you know, when you look at the whole direction that they've intended to go with this, it's really about command and control capabilities of the military. We used to think about that as, you know, controlling equipment and hardware and bombs and bullets. One of the most recent articles that I've read on this issue came out of the Air Force Research Laboratory's Technology Horizons, which is a publication they put out monthly. This particular article was put together by the Directorate dealing with electromagnetic weapon systems, and this is what they're predicting is possible in the upcoming years. And this is what it says, and I quote, "By studying and modeling the human brain and the nervous system, the ability to mentally influence or confuse personnel is also possible. Through sensory deception, it may be possible to create synthetic images or holograms to confuse an individual's visual sense, or in a similar manner can be used as senses of sound, taste, touch, or smell. In other words, to interfere with the normal way the brain interprets its external reality and be able to synthesize that, to create it artificially." And when you think about that, there may be some interesting applications, but when you consider sort of the military's drive to this is to control the ultimate operator of hardware, which is the human being, to be able to influence human beings and not destroy hardware in the process is what part of what controlled effects is all about. This article, titled by that name, actually talks about, you know, using technology for impacting, for instance, the things operating within a weapon system, the computer guidance systems, being able to interfere with those on one level using energy, and then on another level being able to actually melt circuits or destroy circuits, and then on another level being able to manipulate those people that are actually controlling those circuits. And ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about controlling the battlefield environment and controlling the combatants that you're facing within the battlefield that this technology is advancing along those lines.
The Israelis have a device which they're using now to control crowds.
Yeah.
And we have this too. And I'm not sure who developed it first, quite frankly. We may have. But it's that sound machine that literally brings people down to their knees and makes them nauseous. They can't do whatever they're supposed to do in a violent or nonviolent demonstration.
Right.
Is that a form of mind control, Nick?
You know, it's more you're really affecting the physical body in that instance. I mean, certainly you create terror in those instances as well. I mean, the latest one of the U.S. military is the one that creates the heat on the surface of the skin using a pulsed microwave. And this creates a sensation of about 130 degrees on the surface of the skin, like you're on fire. And certainly that's going to create significant, you know, emotional distress. The idea of using a pulsed microwave is kind of interesting to me, because by changing the frequency, the pulse rate, the waveform, or any number of factors, you can affect much different things. In fact, you can use that very same system for impacting emotional states of individuals, and the research exists to demonstrate it. The sad story is that when you introduce these new technologies, not usually the whole story is told. You know, you have to have an answer for what you're bringing into the battlefield. Using sound for creating feelings of nauseous or flu-like symptoms is something that has been demonstrated in weapons applications. When you look at the development of pulse microwave signals for affecting the human body, not just the brain, but every organ of the body, the Air Force contracted with University of Utah and produced what was called the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook, which is sort of the dosages of radio frequency necessary to override the lungs, the liver, the heart, or even the brain of an individual and to affect them. And the part of that that was public, that wasn't classified, is pretty telling in terms of the direction in which the research is headed. And, you know, when you go back to the mid-80s, there was a lot of interest because they had discovered that you could influence externally people's behavior in pretty profound ways. And the idea of using this as in weapons applications became really a major effort of the U.S. military. At the same time, within the classification of what are called non-lethal weapons, and these are technologies that don't necessarily kill, but can have debilitating or devastating effect. The thing about non-lethal weapons development in the United States today is you get priority funding if you have dual use, if you can be used for Department of Defense or DOD applications, and if you can use the same technology for domestic applications for crowd control,
right,
riot control purposes and the like.
Is that why they're developing mind control devices, Nick, and capabilities? Is it all for a bigger picture? And we're going to get into after the break this dark side of all this. But basically, what's the purpose? What's the reason?
I think it's all about control, you know, and I think that's, this is again where, you know, technologies today are capable of changing the very face of the planet. You know, in the last couple of years, we have been given the privilege of serving on a foundation that's set up explicitly to develop dialogue with the public and educate the public on technology issues such as these. And it's the Lay Foundation, Lay Institute on Technologies, and it was set up in Dallas, Texas by Dorothy Lay, primarily to do research into these areas and make sure that we have an opportunity to bring these issues forward to the public in a way that creates a good discussion and knowledge of how these technologies can be used and how they are being used in ways that can negatively impact. So when you talk about victims of this type of technology, at some level, everyone in the country becomes a victim of the technology that we develop if we don't develop it wisely.
I remember a movie, Nick, where a company developed computer software, and they would sell it worldwide. But something in the software, when you were looking at your computer, kind of like hypnotized you or controlled your mind.
Right.
Is it conceivable that that is what's going on now, where they're trying to control everybody and we don't even know it?
I think that's a very strong possibility. And I'll tell you, the you know, the idea of utilizing other transmission systems, using computer systems, the Soviets discovered what's called the 25th frame effect, where every 25th frame they can flash something in front of you that will definitely register with the subconscious and create changes.
Just one frame. Boom.
Boom.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And now the other thing that has happened is there was an article published in a Russian military journal called Orienteer. It was later reprinted and translated into English in the U.S. Army War College's Perimeters, and the article was called, in the U.S. version, "The Mind Has No Firewalls." And within that article, they discussed a number of different ways to affect human behavior using these kinds of systems. And what they say in the context of that is pretty telling. In fact, I've got a short quote. I'm going to try and dig it out here while we're talking.
Okay.
And this is what it said in the paper. It said, "A psychotronic generator which produces a powerful electromagnetic emanation capable of being sent through telephone lines, TV, radio networks, supply pipes, and incandescent lamps. This signal would manipulate the behavior of those in contact with the signal." In other words, anyone around the power grid, the telephone system, or the internet for that matter. And when you look at that and you think about it, I mean, we're all in that grid, if you will. I mean, because everything around us, you know, carries energy. The thing is you can put on those carriers that will carry a signal in that will have a much different effect than just powering your light bulbs in your house. And this is exactly what the Russians had discovered years ago and openly disclosed in what's considered public literature.
Is it conceivable that this is being done through a black ops budget, that there's a group within government that knows what's going on, and that the higher-ups might not even know what's happening?
That's not only possible, but is more probable the fact of the matter. You know, I come from a political background, as you mentioned in the introductions, and, you know, people have this illusion that political leaders are all-knowing, and they're not, you know, in terms of what goes on within government, especially at the federal level. You know, governments are run more by bureaucracies than they are by political leadership at many levels. And so what you see is the development of these kinds of programs existing from administration to administration because they are buried deeply within the institutions. And the only time that they come into public view is under those extraordinary circumstances where people would most likely make the judgment to use them. In other words, people working on these programs don't just bring them out. I mean, they identify a certain amount early on, and in fact, in the book Earth Rising, the Revolution, we define in one chapter over 100 sources showing the evolution of the technology, and then all of a sudden you see these lines of research all of a sudden go black, where no longer do you see them mentioned in the open literature. You see them in some academic circles, but not in the military literature, and that's when the funding sort of shifts over and other agencies pick it up, and you're not getting it into the is developed enough to where they really don't want the public involved. And when you talk about political control utilizing this kind of technology, you know, there's a very good book that I recommend to folks is Between Two Ages by Brzezinski, which was written back in the 70s. and technology was the focus of that particular book and its impact on the future. And if you read it today, it reads as a history. And I think it tells a lot. I think after the break, we can kind of talk about, you know, what
okay,
he said.
Okay, we'll do that. And I really want to also get into the dark side of these technologies and how they can maybe even affect elections, steer us in direction. Maybe can you affect millions of people at one time? Back in a moment with our guest, Nick Begich on Coast to Coast. You know, Nick, you're talking about the book by Zygmunt Brzezinski.
Right.
And I always thought he was part of the Illuminati.
Well, you know, he was one of the founders of the
Trilateral Commission.
Yeah.
That's right.
With, I believe it was with, now I forget his name. He was in the Nixon administration.
Henry?
Yeah, with Henry Kissinger.
That's
and,
right.
You know, I think when you look at Zbigniew Brzezinski as sort of a forward thinker, kind of predicting what's going to happen, whether, you know, you read his text as a forecast or a prediction or a roadmap, which I think is probably more accurate.
He might have been in on the know, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the people lay out, you know, people lay out their plan for, you know, how they want to develop political and social systems. And this issue of using technology to further that end was sort of the center point of Zbigniew's work. And he writes in kind of a convoluted style. This is before he became a national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. But when you go back and you read the material, there was one particular section in it that was startling to me. And it's on page 56 and 57. And it's the section that deals with this idea of physical control of the mind, the idea of being able to develop technologies that would influence human behavior in a way that would be quite devastating. In fact, it was that particular article that we quoted, or that book section we quoted in our very first work on HARP, because back in those days, they had made the assertion that if we could ever figure out how to electronically stroke the ionosphere in just the right way, that we could return a signal to the Earth in the ELF range that would affect human emotional states over large geographic areas. And this was the area of HARP that sort of crosses over into this issue of mind control, because we know absolutely that ELF signals, extremely low frequency signals, when directed and developed in certain ways, can influence behavior. And the way this happens is through a process called brain entrainment, where the brain actually locks onto these external signals, begins to mirror those signals in a way that they can't be resisted. It's just a natural phenomena, what will naturally happen. You can utilize flickering light for creating that effect. You can use binaural beat, which is generated by sound signals going in both ears, one coming in at one frequency and one at the other, and they create sort of a cancellation effect, which leaves a beat frequency in this ELF range, because a human ear can't hear in the ELF range. We can't hear that low of a frequency. So they create this method for doing that. The brain locks onto that signal, begins to entrain, and then all of the normal reactions that would occur with that brain state then do occur. You know, we were able to take a look at, you know, sort of what else was out there, you know, along this line. And when you look at the military's own words on the subject matter, there was a document, Low Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology, produced by Maxwell Air Force Base in 1984. And that particular document talks about the ability to override the brain using light, using sound, using electromagnetic fields. Much later than that, in 1999, February 7th, a show called Undercurrents in Canada, which is on their public broadcasting, one of the highest rated public broadcasting programs in Canada, they featured a story on mind control, and they brought in Persinger from Laurentian University, who was able to demonstrate the ability to create illusions using electromagnetic fields, the ability to change emotional states using electromagnetic fields, even creating out-of-body experiences, creating the abduction experiences, utilizing just external fields to manipulate what was going on within the brains of individuals.
Now, you don't think that's part of an experiment, Nick, do you? I mean, so many people, millions of people, believe they've been abducted. Some may have been, but quite frankly, do you think it's possible that there have been experiments on these people?
I think that's a possibility, absolutely. And many of these instances, I would not say all of these instances, but many. And the reason I think that experimentation is possible and likely is at Laurentian University, Persinger did work for the Central Intelligence Agency and did do some projects for them.
And they think that maybe they're seeing aliens where they're being basically mind-controlled to think they're seeing aliens when really they're human beings, maybe.
Well, in this case, it was stimulating the brain in a way that created that experience yet they never left the chair. And there was never any, you know, visual images brought into them or anything like
this. Okay.
It was done just by stimulating the brain artificially using electromagnetic fields. Then he demonstrated this technique on undercurrents. He also talked about, when you talk about a wide range of people being affected, what he suggested is that, as an example he gave, with what he had developed, is you could create a very complex signal on a radio broadcast that created a sensation of high anxiety and stress in the population. And then what he suggested you could do is go on the air, say on the nightly news, and indict an ethnic group as an example, the example he gave. And what would happen is people would turn all that anxiety and tension and anger towards that target. And so, you know, using it just in that way, which he felt would be quite simple to administer, to actually lay out and do, whether you were directly working with the radio stations or not, you could embed a signal in a way that would be carried on their broadcasts, and you could affect that. You know, that whole concept, you know, when you stop and think about it, the idea that people could actually accomplish this, and there's no regulation. I mean, there's nothing that would prevent someone from doing this, either an individual or a government. And that, again, is where the big concerns come up. You know, the crossover on HAARP on this issue, when we took HAARP into the European Parliament and addressed that issue, we also took the issue of mind control, although we didn't characterize it in those words. And what we ended up with was a resolution. It's resolution A40005/99. Section 27 of that resolution, the first three sections above it deal with HAARP, but the last section calls for an international convention introducing a global ban on all developments and deployments of weapons which might enable any form of manipulation of human beings. Now, we convinced the European Parliament that the technology existed by giving them almost 3 feet of unclassified documents that proved it. And then we demonstrated an infrasound device, an actual device, in a pre-hearing conference with the committee and a couple members of the European media, where we showed how infrasound, how voice information, such as what people are hearing on the radio tonight, mm-hmm. can be transferred directly through the nervous system of the human body and be perceived in the head as that proverbial voice in the head. And when we demonstrated that in a closed hearing, that became very compelling, because infrasound technologies had been spoken about in the open literature. In fact, even the Strategic Studies Institute in London had discussed the uses of these technologies, yet there were no policy guidelines. There was no real discussion politically about the ramifications of the technology. And when we got finished with the testimony, I was approached by the technical advisor for Santer at the time, who was a president of the European Commission. And he had basically said, look, we're not going to stop until we have a full understanding and begin to pursue this area and the areas related to it, because they believed it was the most invasive type of technology they'd ever heard of. And it wasn't just us talking. We produced the documents that supported the position and the direction of military research through the open literature. And, you know, it should be disconcerting. I mean, if you think about any religious tradition in the world, they all value free will as a fundamental aspect of what we are as human beings. And the idea of someone believing that they have the rationale or ability or justification to override individuals' brains is fundamentally flawed. I mean, ethically, it's just a horrible state for our military to be in.
There are a lot of sick people on this planet. I don't want to minimize that.
Yep.
But there are some people who have committed these horrendous crimes, and they claim that they heard voices, and these voices told them to do it. They almost as if they lost control of who they were. Could that be, I mean, is that part of an experiment in some cases?
I believe it is. And let me give you a direct quote. And this this quote is going to come from Aaron Space for the 21st Century, a document called New World Vistas. And it's a quote out of Earth, Rise, and Revolution. And it says, and I quote, "It would also appear possible to create high-fidelity speech in the human body, raising the possibility of covert suggestion and psychological direction. Thus, it may be possible to talk to selected adversaries in a fashion that would be most disturbing to them," unquote. That's exactly what you're talking about.
It sure is. Elect a Manchurian candidate,
right?
Isn't it?
Right. Now, this was projected in this particular document. It was projected as something that was going to come in the future. And there was actually an article that was published in April of this year And it was April 22nd, 2005. It's an AP story originating out of Portland, Oregon, where they actually recognize a guy, Woody Norris, who is an inventor.
I just had Woody on about a month ago.
Well, so you know, I mean, here's a guy that invented hypersonic sound that can literally transfer sound signals, you know, into the head. And in this case, he's using ultrasonics. But the same technology is believed to be possible, the same type of technology in terms of delivery on it can be done through pulsed microwaves.
He could have four different radio stations in a car with four people, and he could beam one station to each person. You know, one person might want talk, the other might want music, the other might want sports and something else. He could beam these four signals directly to the individual, and the other ones won't hear it.
That's right. Now, there was some discussion back a couple of years ago. This hypersonic sound was being played out for vending machine use, where when you go through the when you're walking down the street and you walk in front of the vending machine, if you're within a certain zone, it sends you the the slogan.
Do you want a Snickers or whatever?
Right. And so, you know, here you have a technology being, you know, promoted as something for commercial uses. Now, the important thing about that is these commercial uses, when you talk about interference with brain performance in this way, you know, in some situations, I think this one of hypersonic sound maybe doesn't penetrate below the level of consciousness. But what if you send a signal in that is not necessarily consciously perceived? You know, can you do that? You know, can you influence behavior without a conscious perception of a signal? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And this has been demonstrated using neurophonic technology, which was developed as far back as the 1960s.
Is the goal, Nick, here, though, to control millions of people on this planet, perhaps billions of people at one time?
You know, as a goal or as an outcome, from my perspective, that's the outcome. For some, maybe it's an objective. And I think going back to Brzezinski again, you know, what Brzezinski said in Between Two Ages is as these technologies emerged, that no matter who was in power, liberal or conservative, their temptation to utilize the technology to further their political ends would outweigh their good sense to reframe. And I think that says it all. I think the fact is that people who believe that they're doing right, and I don't believe most people in political office or leadership positions get in there and say, okay, how am I going to screw things up today? They go in and they believe that they're doing the right thing on whatever values platform that they exist on. And the idea of maybe making it work a little faster, work a little smoother, the temptation is there. And that's where I think the flaw is human nature being what it is, we're going to make the mistakes. And I think we already have in this country on several levels. There is a multitude of victims of experiments of all different kinds, including these, and yet no one's ever gone to trial for that. Who's in jail for that? Who's in jail for victimizing 500,000 Americans in this country?
Nobody, and somebody should be.
And that's exactly right. And you know, the idea that technologies today, and you know, we talked a lot about different technologies on the program over the years, you know, and we've got technologies that don't just affect individual humans, but can affect, you know, things on a very grand scale. And when you have that capacity, then the responsibilities that go with it have a whole lot more to do with disclosure and openness than they do with running things in smoke-filled rooms at the Pentagon. And I think that's where the European Parliament, when they weighed in on this issue, they weighed in on it. And it was just after, if you remember back during the late 90s, there was that event in Japan where 700 kids had gone to the hospital with epileptic seizures.
They were looking at a video game.
They were watching a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
And what everyone believed up until then in terms of the mass of the population was that sitting in front of your television set 10 or 15 feet away was just fine. And yet here was a signal, a flickering light at a very specific flicker rate that the brain locked onto, and it caused those epileptic seizures in 700 kids, and it wasn't a great deal of energy. And this is a very important element here. When you talk about global systems, you know, everyone wants to talk about how much power it takes. Well, it's not about the volume of power. It's about the frequency and the way in which the energy is manipulated that is the most important. And if you look at the work of Delgado at Yale University, and Delgado, just to give people a little background for those that don't, He came over from Madrid, Spain. He had gotten his degree in electrophysiology from the University of Madrid in 1950. He came over to the to Yale University and began mapping the human brain to figure out which parts were responsible for what activities. And he wrote a book called Towards a Psycho-Civilized Society. It was published in 1969. And when you look at this book, it's really about this attitude that, you know, what if we could do all these things and make people feel good? Wouldn't that be a great thing? And it's that kind of attitude that permeates his writing. Now, what happened later in the mid-'80s is he found out, and back in 69, let me go back, he had an example that he gave in the book, and it was several images of a charging bull, and maybe you remember this, where he flips a switch and a radio transmitter goes off and the bull stops right in front of him, doesn't attack him. And in this case, he used implanted technology. Well, by 1985, he had figured out that using pulsed radio frequency signals at 1/50th of what the Earth generates, which is a very, very small amount of energy. By comparison, the amount of energy around us in the radio frequency regime is like 200 million times more than the Earth produces. So 1/50th of what the Earth produces is a grain of sand on the beach, and yet that energy is sufficient to override brain activity and change emotional states when it's directed at individuals or groups of individuals. And he did this without any implants or physical contact with the subjects at all. And that's how far the technology advanced up until the mid-'80s, which is now 20 years old.
Well, when you say some of this started during a little after the Korean War, maybe even during, who concocted this?
Well, you know, I mean, the idea of the body being something more than a bunch of chemicals, that it's more regulated by electromagnetic fields and bioenergetic fields, goes back into the 20s and 30s, you know, when they were using dithermia units for cancer treatment. The Rife devices were developed in the 30s. I believe that was the 30s. There was a lot of interest pre-World War II looking at electromagnetic energy for healing purposes. You can even go back to when they were looking at a muscle in frogs back in the 1700s when they electrified dead animals to see what would happen with them. You know, you go back so far back, and yet you come up to World War II, and then what happened at World War II? World War II took place, and these kind of models sort of went away, and they were replaced by chemical models, and the pharmaceutical industry emerged as a very powerful force. Coming out of the war, these models were forgotten and replaced by chemical models for the human body that just in the last couple of decades have started to drift back towards now what people are talking about, electrochemical models, which is still only halfway back to where we ought to be, because every chemical reaction underlying it is an energy exchange, is an energy interaction.
Some people believe that fluoride in water is contributing to some form of mind control.
Yeah, and this comes out through literature regarding fluoridation in terms of what it does to suggestibility. That's been said for a long, long time. You know, there's the thing that I would say is the technology today is so sophisticated, you don't need chemical agents to augment the effects. You don't need the kinds of things implant technology.
That's low tech stuff now.
Yeah, that would be considered low tech. Now, implant technologies has other advantages, you know, in terms of local control of an individual, tracking purposes, you know, the kinds of things that now are in the open literature. You know, 5-6 years ago, we were talking about some of this, and people would look at you, you know, pre-9/11 like you were out of your mind. Today, in post-9/11, I think people have started to look at it because there's a little more open discussion. You know, a lot of the discussion about the mind control issues actually emerges out of the former Soviet Union, where they're a little more free to speak. In fact, even during the undercurrent segment that I'd referenced earlier, there was a couple of the Morrises who had done work during the Reagan-Bush era on non-lethal weapons. And what they had said is they couldn't talk about anything they had done in the United States. They could only talk about what they had observed in Russia and the former Soviet Union.
What's their motivation, Nick? What do they want?
Ultimately, it is about control. I mean, the idea of pacifying crowds. I mean, think about what we're dealing with in Iraq right now. And this is where I think we're going to start to hear a lot more about it.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Now we'll open up the phone lines. Your turn with Nick Begich right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Nick Begich, our guest. Nick, a few weeks ago I had a guest on who he claims that aliens are trying to communicate with people in a bad way. And he has invented, and he's darn serious about it, and he's got the, you know, credentials up and down his arm, that he's invented some kind of hat device to cloak people from and shield people from these signals. Would that work in this case?
I don't know enough about the technology he's developed to really answer that fairly. You know, the thing about it is, I would say this, is if the transmissions are on similar systems, you know, whether they're using radio signals or microwaves or something like this, and it's designed for that, to mitigate that, certainly. But, you know, I have no idea of what particular signals he was trying to block or how they might be generated or anything about that. So I couldn't really say. But that kind of idea has been kicked around, you know, by people a lot. You know, is there something that we can individually do? And unfortunately, because of the diversity in which technology can be applied, the answer is probably not. There's not an individual technique, if you will, that will work. One thing that's kind of interesting, though, is when you look at the older materials, the older literature on this subject, they said that on the mass systems, the systems that would affect like large geographic areas, that they would only affect 70 or 80% of the population. Well, that sort of begs the question, well, how come it didn't affect the other 20 or 30%? And there's several possibilities. One is near fields, things that are close to you that actually have a stronger signal that your body will tend to lock onto. And your body will lock onto the strongest signal in its vicinity and kind of ignore much of the other, like you ignore background noise in a crowded room. So strong signals in your proximity that are beneficial signals might, and I say might loudly, might solve some of the problem. The other thing that might be useful, along that same line, is the idea that maybe strong systems, in other words, individuals who are healthy and strong individually, aren't as susceptible to external fields because their own signal strength, their own resonant frequency is high enough to mitigate external fields that are small or slight. That's a possibility, and again, a possibility. Developing a technology or a device that will counter every signal that can be carried in, I don't think such a device could be created economically for the average person to ever be able to touch. The real issue is, what do we do the same question could be asked is, what do I do to avoid personally a chemical or biological attack? And some people have done that. They got out and bought a gas mask. But the vast majority of people go, well, wait a minute. Certain things, there's nothing I can do about it. It's really the broader society. It's a mission of the whole population to do something about it. In this case, regulate. And as we have chemical weapons, as we have biological weapons, we need to regulate these in a way that makes sure that they serve our interest and amplify our values and don't discount them.
Jim writes from California, he might be right here. The practice, he says, even like we do when we mention sponsorship phone numbers and things several times, he says, that's subliminal by itself, isn't it?
Well, I mean, everything is two differences. One is persuasive and one is manipulative. And, you know, when you look at communication generally, there's a book, it's not been published in a number of years, called Man the Manipulator, that what it does is compare persuasion versus manipulation, and the distinction they draw is persuasion comes from delivering a lot of information or hopefully all of the information relevant to making a good decision, so that you can be able to make that decision. Manipulation is providing only the information necessary to create the outcome you personally desire and forget about the truth or forget about full disclosure. And so much of communication, I mean, if you really think about each communication event, whether it's on this radio broadcast or an interpersonal conversation, isn't it always about that? I mean, isn't it about persuasion?
Sure.
Or manipulation? And isn't it about how much information do you give in a good, lively debate? The idea is to get all the information out. You know, freedom of the press wasn't so much in the beginning about saying whatever you wanted. It was about stimulating the public debate so good public policy could be developed by the average person, so that we would have the kind of discussion that we're having, you know, from the one-page newspapers of the 1700s to talk radio in the 21st century. This is the medium for democracy in the country today, is the idea that we can have this kind of discussion, this kind of dialogue, open up the ideas, and then point out the references and let people go find out for themselves and bring back more information on the next round. So maybe I learned something, and I do all the time, I can assure you, from listeners who send me things all the time. And, you know, this is what democracy is really about fundamentally. It's about communicating ideas, having lively discussion, and making sure at the end of the day, as much information as we can find is out there so the best decision that serves all of our interests can be made.
To the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Josh calling from Syracuse, New York.
Sure, Josh. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk to your guest about the connection between people with schizophrenia and mind control.
He's there listening for you. Go ahead.
I'd like to know the connection between people with schizophrenia and whether or not there's propaganda between the government and mind control.
All right.
Okay, you're asking about schizophrenia. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, schizophrenia is a disorder. There are some lots of chemical treatments, of course, that we've heard about over the years that really dampen some things and get some things in control. The question that comes up often is, you know, the very same symptoms that are experienced by some schizophrenics are the same kinds of symptoms that would be demonstrated by people influenced by these kinds of technologies. So the question, you know, often becomes is, you know, am I a target or am I really experiencing, you know, some other problems? You know, when you look at schizophrenia, there's a paper, and this paper was put together by Anu Mikaela in Finland, who did a study on acupuncture applications for schizophrenics, and actually found an application where certain acupuncture points could be stimulated that would rebalance the chemicals in the body in a similar way to way, you know, these artificial chemicals do, but create a situation where schizophrenia was relatively neutralized in some clients. Now, when I look at the government's interest in schizophrenia, I mean, to solve the problem, and it is a big problem, we get mail from folks all the time that experience these kinds of phenomena and have been diagnosed schizophrenic. I think personally that many of them are schizophrenic. Others I have doubts about. I think there's maybe other things going on. But we're not in a position to sort it out. We just don't have the resources or the equipment. And because of the variety of ways in which things can be created synthetically, there's no way for me to sort that out, nor do I consider that my primary mission right now. I mean, I believe that the first step in solving this problem of mind control is making people aware of what is possible and what is necessary in order to regulate those possibilities.
Well, can it be stopped rather than regulated?
I don't think you're going to stop it, because I think there's too many governments involved today in developing these technologies, and our government is not going to sit back and say, all right, we're not going to develop the technologies. Where I think our government should spend more of its time is developing countermeasures and making those more readily available to the public. And that's a fair way to develop in this direction if we're going to develop in it at all. I don't believe we should be developing offensive weapon systems in the mind control regime. I think it's fundamentally wrong. I think there's other ways to achieve victories in battles that are justified. Mind control technologies are not the answer, and they violate every human principle that I believe this country and other free countries stand for, which is the idea to think freely.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name's Sarah D'Souza, and we've been experiencing hate crimes in the form of electronic harassment since 9/11. And I had a couple questions for Mr. Begich. It's kind of a three-pronged question. We've been kind of collecting evidence and observing what's been going on, our health symptoms, and we're not sure if we've deduced everything, but there were a couple things we did. We put up corrugated sheeting around our house, and it seemed to alleviate our health symptoms and corrugated metal sheeting and reduce the high temperatures we were seeing in our home. And I wanted to know what your thoughts would be on that. And the next thing was...
Let's do one at a time. Hold on. One at a time, okay?
Sorry.
in terms of shielding, you probably got that set up so that it's grounded out?
Yeah, it was grounded. It was also at an angle. We connected it from the roof of our house to the fence.
Yeah.
And we had it all the way around our house.
Well, I don't know what specifically that might, you know, electric fields, electromagnetic fields will go to ground on something like this.
Okay.
Beyond that, I mean, if you've noticed a perceptible change, that's interesting. It would have been good to get some pre-measurements and then some post-measurements to see what actually was happening.
We did that in terms of the temperature.
Okay.
Like, we saw a 15 to 25 degree temperature between our house and the outside reported temperature. And then when we put up the shielding around our house, it went down and matched the outside reported temperature.
Well, your energy transfer through the metal is pretty efficient comparably. I mean, if you go to a metal door versus a wooden door and put your hand on it, you'll see the difference in the temperature transfer between the substance that it's composed of.
Okay.
So that would could easily explain that. The thing I would look for is, you know, with a trimeter or a meter, looking at electromagnetic fields within the residence before and after and see if there was a perceptible change, because that's something you could see on a meter pretty readily.
Okay. And, we do have a tri-field meter, and we've measured an intermittent 3 milligauss reading around our house and inside of our house.
Okay. You know, and that could be for, you know, from a number of sources. And this becomes difficult. And this is, again, why, you know, we're not really in the business of sorting it out, because you'd have to bring in look at the whole spectrum and look at how you can pulse a signal or carry a signal. And then you go, man, the possibilities become enormous and almost endless. So mitigating against each one becomes difficult. And, you know, what you've done in equalizing your house and your outside temperatures has apparently had a beneficial health effect. I couldn't explain that without a whole lot more information. But, you know, I mean, the transfer of energy through metal versus other substances is just much more efficient.
Next up, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Nick Begich on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Hello.
Boy, I tell you, with all this onslaught to our brains, we should take care of our brains as well as possible.
We're lucky we still have brains.
You know,
I have a comment about brain cells and then a related question for Nick. I've been doing a lot of research into what we can do to perhaps increase the ability to grow new brain cells because of the aluminum and barium from the chemtrails getting in the brain, and lack of sleep and stress, we're all losing brain cells quicker than we should. And the general idea is that we're pretty much born with the brain cells we're going to have, and the parts of the brain where you can grow new brain cells, they don't migrate to parts of the brain where you lose them and need them. And I was wondering, Nick, in your travels, have you come across anything that increases the chances for neurogenesis, which is the increase in growing new brain cells?
Yeah, actually, I have. The Salk Institute in Southern California has done some work in that area, and we published in Earth Rising and Earth Rising 2, I think both we may have mentioned their work, because they had actually developed a way to grow neurons, which was even the more difficult. And to be able to grow brain cells artificially, in fact, even on electronic substrates. So you could actually grow brain tissue on electronic substrates, so you could actually integrate it into machines.
Well, I mean, for our purposes, human beings.
Well, that's the same, you know, you think about it as in the same way artificial limbs are created to, you know, augment someone's loss. The same can be true with this type of technology, which is the interest of that particular institute's research, is to try and figure out a way to repair the brain, basically, to develop techniques to repair brain damage. You know, and the brain's a pretty versatile, you know, organ in terms of being able to work around problems, and this is where things like brain biofeedback come into play. There's other methods for sort of rerouting the way the brain operates a little bit, at least within certain margins, to solve some of the problems that might be created by stroke or by other injuries. But, you know, brain research as a subject area is huge. The idea of being able to grow brain cells was something that was demonstrated experimentally, I believe, around 1999 or 2000 in laboratory environments. And the Salk Institute, I believe, was central in that.
You know, the work that everybody has been doing on this technology seems to be pretty dramatic, but is there any other nation ahead of us in this kind of endeavor?
Well, I think if you go back to the early work, the theoretical models that were developed in the former Soviet Union, I think, were way ahead of what we were doing, at least as it appears in the open literature. Even the understanding of electromagnetic fields effects on the human body, you know, back at the end of the Cold War, the Soviets had 1,000 times higher a threshold for human exposures, or I should say lower threshold for human exposures to electromagnetic fields, because they recognize that even small amounts of energy can be quite profound when they interact with the human body. And it's not a matter of everything affecting us. I mean, if you think about all the energy around us today, it's tremendous. It's not the volume, it's the directed energy for a specific effect, and it has more to do with frequency. And if you think about this analogy, and I've used it, I think, before on the program, is a radio station, in between the stations you get only static, and yet when you get resonance, harmony between the transmitter and receiver, then you get a nice clear signal and everyone hears our voice like they are tonight. The same is true in the human body with every cell, every chemical, every organ, the entire body itself are all can be influenced by external fields of the right frequency and wavelength. And what you see in the development of these technologies is the greater understanding. As we gain understanding of how these energy fields interact with our physiology, that's where the exploitation for new weapons and the development of new health technologies becomes possible. And the unfortunate part of the health technology side of the equation, that's not part of the military mission, except for dealing with mitigating technologies, things that can solve the problem if it's directed at us.
Let's go to our international line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Patagonia.
Ah, Paraguay, huh?
Indeed.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
What interested me the most was a connection between technology and Godship. And I had the Bible hammered into my mind as a child, and I'll never forget it. And it's really cool because I had a structure to judge everything from, and I'm at peace with that. One of the things that came to mind was a couple of times when the nation of Israel was doing battle, God put derision into the minds of the enemy so that they were so confused they began to slay each other. And that brought back a lot of other thoughts about technology, like if a spaceship landed in 607 BCE, they would call it a god. But then again, if Apache helicopter landed in 607 BCE in Israel, they would call it a god also. The idea of our technology putting us in a godship place where we can control at will other people's minds, and then the precedent that's been set up in the Bible, all seem to kind of make sense to me a little bit.
I think you're right on with that.
Absolutely.
And I think, Nick, there could have been some kind of tremendous technology years
Absolutely.
Ago.
Absolutely. I believe that the creation is created under universal laws and rules, and however you look at what God is, that's the discovery for human beings is figuring out what those rules and laws are. And that's the creative capacity of human beings. And our creative capacity is limitless, in my view. And I think that's where the challenge and the precaution lies. Free will is a powerful thing. We need to exercise it wisely.
Back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Final segment with Nick Begich. Nick, by the way, the two DVD series, how do people find it? Get it?
Oh, for sure. We have a toll-free number I can give you. It's 888-690-1277. Again, that's 888-690-1277. And we've got a special on both of those DVDs. They're an hour and a half video segments. They have complimentary CD-ROMs with them with a lot of the documents we've been talking about tonight, and both of them, freight paid in the U.S., is $35, so it's a really excellent buy.
For the package.
That's right, for both DVDs and both CD-ROMs.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. First-time caller line, you're up. Hi there.
George, hi. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Good. I had just a quick question for you. I was just wondering, you say that there needs to be regulations with as far as these weapons go and everything, the mind control. What's going to stop other countries, even our country, from going ahead and doing it anyway?
Well, I think that, again, our government is well known for doing its own thing, whether we like it or not. I think that but if you set up a regulatory environment, only you do it a little bit differently. In the past, and generally we indemnify as public employees from their actions when they act on behalf of the government. I don't think we should do that in this case. I think we should make people fully culpable for what they do. When you do that, people are much less willing to say yes, and I think that's the first step in the right direction. There are a lot of very brilliant, principled people working in programs that are compartmentalized, not really having full knowledge of what their programs do. When those very brilliant people gain full knowledge and it conflicts with their value systems, many of them will move on to other projects and have plenty of options in life. And I think a good discussion, an open discussion, might breed a little bit more of that, where the very good scientists that are doing the work can put it towards more beneficial uses. The other area where I think our government should be very involved is in mitigation technologies, technologies that avoid the problem, so that our electronic equipment does have the proper safeguards to screen out these signals that they are very well aware of, that radio broadcasts are protected, and that violations are severely punished and by long and arduous jail terms. And that is the solution, and you create whistleblower mechanisms to hold people accountable. And I think those mechanisms are needed not just in this area, but many of the areas covered on Coast to Coast AM are controversial areas where full disclosure and at least a little more disclosure is certainly in order. And I think most of us would agree the American public is more prepared for the truth than we've been inundated by the lies.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Appreciate that. And the lies will catch up with everybody eventually.
Eventually it does. You know, and you know, with all of this, you know, when I look at technology and you know, people have asked me on these subjects, you know, don't you get a little nervous? Don't you get afraid? And, you know, and the answer is no, I don't. You know, my wife, who's here with me this evening, would tell you, you know, I've never in all of this work experienced fear as a function of my work life, because I really believe that when you do what you're supposed to be doing in life, things tend to work pretty smoothly. And even with the rough spots, a lot's gained by that. And I think these issues are the big issues of the 21st century. Coast to Coast is one of the few shows that deals with technology as a fundamental area of its work. And as a consequence, more and more people become aware. Things can change. You know, you'd be amazed. Tom Spencer of the European Parliament heard about HARP from someone that heard us on this show, on the Coast to Coast program, back when Art was doing it, mm-hmm. back in 95. That individual got our book, read it, marked it all up, sent it to a friend of his who at the time was chairing the Foreign Affairs Committee at that time. He was chairing the Environmental Subcommittee. That was Tom Spencer, and he eventually became chairman of Foreign Affairs and was able to get a resolution passed and some movement headed towards a more positive direction. So I think there's a lot to be said for what every listener hearing this broadcast has the potential of doing is making a change that will profoundly affect the world. And it may be a very, very small thing by their own measure, but there are no small things. My experience tells me that when people act on what they believe to be right and true, amazing things happen, things that are unexpected happen. And that's what we need to be more about, and less about the fear and the worry, and more about doing what we can do within our own individual power about the issues that are important to us, whether it's these issues or others.
Nick, since you brought up HARP, do you think that has anything to do with this mind control technology?
I think with HARP at this point, you know, the program manager, John Heckscher, was confronted with that during a video segment, again, by CBC-TV in Canada. And he basically referred to it as a side effect of the technology, something they weren't interested in. From my perspective, because, again, it's a compartmentalized program, it's now shifted over to DARPA from the Navy and the Air Force. You know, DARPA deals with these kinds of programs, and now is when I would expect to see that kind of experimentation take place. I don't think it was ever designed primarily as a mind control technology. It was designed as a weapon system for a lot of other applications, but as a spinoff, it's a pretty compelling one, and one that has been forecasted since 1969 by the Brzezinskis and J.F. Gordon MacDonald at UCLA and many others as being possible. The possibility is there. Will this administration or the next administration use it for this purpose? That's a good question, and one that I would not be surprised to see the answer, yes, they would, if they felt that it would serve their purposes. I mean, what we've already seen, preemptive warfare, what does that mean? You know, in the advent of speed of light weapons, that's a scary concept if the Chinese happen to be the ones to develop the most powerful weapons first and use that principle of war and apply it against us.
Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick. Hi, everyone else.
Sure.
I have a question about a more benevolent kind of technology, but I think Nick will be knowledgeable about this. I heard mentioned on a documentary, I think on Nova something, and I'm wondering if you could enlighten us where we could find out more about this or explain it more on the spot. And this has to do with a system of multiplying and representing numerals used in Athabascan culture, which enables people to multiply very large numbers very easily and very quickly.
Well, it's interesting. I'm adopted Athabascan, and I don't know about this numbering system. And
could
I work
find
with,
out for us for next time you're on the program?
I'll make some inquiries with some of our elders. I work with Chicoloon Village, which is a traditional tribal government in Alaska. I was their tribal administrator for a number of years, and I currently work a little bit as their planner on a part-time basis for them. And so I'll talk to my clan grandmother and ask her, and I'm sure, in fact, she often listens to the program. Maybe she's even hearing us tonight. So I'll ask her about this, and we'll make the inquiry. And next time I'm on, I hope to have an answer for you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Mate.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Next up, our next wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Joan from San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah,
and
hi.
I heard a speaker at the Parkinson's Institute conference who said he had done research through NIH funding on controlling trembling, shaking, lack of muscle control, gait, swallowing problems associated with Parkinson's disease through electromagnetic methods of, remote electromagnetic methods of control. And I was at this Parkinson's Institute conference hearing this. I thought, well, you know, that could also apply to perhaps arrhythmia of the heart or epilepsy or paralysis,
right.
Seizures, maybe asthmatic breathing problems, even bone growth and osteoporosis, intestinal problems like constipation or whatever. And I was wondering, is there a good source of information on published research? Because apparently it's not being published for some reason to a large extent. And I wondered why it's not being published. Why is it being done unpublished?
Well, there's a couple things. The one document I referenced in the very first segment tonight was the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook, which is produced by the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, I believe. And it was 1985 is the year. And that's a public record, or it was until, I'm sure it still is. And it was available to us on interlibrary loan, and then we eventually got a copy. And it lays out some of that. If you look up, if you just look into electromagnetic field effects, you'll find lots of literature, if you really dig into that subject. And this is very controversial in the medical sciences, and kind of the split between the mathematics and the physicists and the experimental physicists and the bioscientists sort of split in colleges where people had really high math skills, they went into the physics. The things that underlie chemical reactions, the people that had lesser math skills but really good chemistry skills tend to go in life sciences. The idea of energy being a principal player in either causing or affecting health conditions is not something that's readily accepted by most medical practitioners in the West. It is in the East, just because of the nature of their sciences and the development of their science.
But not just energy like yoga or something, but actually instead of putting, implanting a pacemaker in the heart, you could use something external, like a little tiny radio, like you have, or something in your pocket, and just turn it on, and that would calm your heart or whatever.
Right.
if you were putting it back
in rhythm, or disrupting the rhythm, which is what the military has been working on, is how to create heart attacks in people.
Maybe that's causing, but this is for healing, so maybe that's why you don't see some of it. Maybe
that's exactly it.
Would mean the person wouldn't have to have drugs.
Right.
And so this Parkinson's Institute work would be very interesting if you could control the symptoms of Parkinson's without having to implant things actually in the brain.
And this is where we think the biggest betrayal of the public trust is, because when the military develops technologies understanding these underlying principles and then withholds them under national security for weapons applications, we have a strong objection to that, because we believe the higher value of that knowledge isn't in figuring out how to kill people more efficiently, but how to solve people's health issues, particularly, where it's American tax dollars being spent for that, for the development of that knowledge. And I think what you see is the independent institutes that are developing the knowledge in these areas are doing it with a fraction of the funding. And none of the fundamental foundational research has been developed for military applications. And this is, again, a huge betrayal of public trust from my perspective.
East of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm in Grand Prairie, Texas, and I've heard of these things. I've seen them on the Internet. They're called the Gwyn Towers and Ground Wave Emergency Network. And I've read that those are used in conjunction with chemtrails to manipulate weather and for mind control.
Yeah, I really couldn't. I know the Gwyn system exists, and I'm familiar with it going back to the very beginnings of when we did our first research on HARP. And, people have tried to bring correlations or connections between the two. The unfortunate thing is I've never seen the documents to support those connections. And George will tell you, I'm a document kind of guy. If you've got it in the paper form where I can see that the sources are good and solid, where I'm willing to go public with them. And this is a big responsibility. When you take these issues public, I believe it's not just informing folks, but you're hoping people act on the knowledge in responsible ways, and that requires a lot of responsibility on the researcher side. So I'm not so quick to just jump into the middle of the latest controversy unless there's really good supportive evidence. And on that particular tie-in, I have not seen the evidence, although it may be out there. I just haven't seen it.
Okay, well, out here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Yeah.
I've noticed the chemtrails for about 3 years now, and I talked to George a couple months ago. They called me the chemtrail poet.
Okay.
And I'd like to give you another one, George, if I could. But anyhow, since the chemtrails started, they've built a lot of, it looks like, transmission towers with these big round white drums on them. And somebody told me that those were used for microwave transmission.
They are. We have them. We have probably one of the most modern microwave communication systems in the world in Alaska, just because of the remoteness of the place. And we have them everywhere. We have since the late 60s when they put in the first ones.
Okay, well, Dallas-Fort Worth is really remote, but, I mean, they're everywhere. And then there's cell phone towers where you'll see clusters of them. They'll be,
right,
15 poles within a couple blocks of each other, and a lot of times you could hear these high-frequency tones through the air, and not everybody hears them. I hear them,
right.
My daughter hears them, a couple friends hear them, and real high-pitched, so the dogs hear them. They start barking.
Okay, well, that's not unusual, actually. There was a study done by the University of New Mexico, and it was insisted upon by a New Mexico U.S. representative who was researching what was called then the Taos hum, and still is referred as that. And the thing is, it doesn't just occur in New Mexico. It occurs all over the world. And if you go back to the invention of radio, there was a small segment of the people that said, hey, the thing is driving me crazy, when they turned on the first radios back in Europe in the turn of the last century. There are some individuals, it appears, by the research, that 1-3% of the population are sensitive to electromagnetic fields and perceive that some of these signals as actual sound. And the reason they know that they're man-made is they're coherent or rhythmic. They're not the kind of sounds or signals that nature generally makes. So, there is something going on there. With the cell towers, there's some great work that has been done in Europe on the subject. We have a great article on our website on cell phones, and cell phone towers is sort of the other half of it. And there are serious issues there. George Carlo, who did the work for the industry, actually, $25 million study on cell phones, published a book by the same name, Cell Phones, that talks all about the problems that he uncovered and the cautions that he tried to make to the industry that they ignored him completely.
Oh, they weren't too happy with his results.
No, not at all happy. And he is one of my heroes. Here's a guy, I've never met him, but I can tell you, anyone that can take and do a $25 million study and get done and go back to the industry that paid for that study and say, sorry, guys, it's not like you hoped it would be, that's my kind of guy.
Yeah, that's guts.
First, that takes a lot.
First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yep.
Hi. Art, I love your show. This is Teresa from Riverside, Iowa.
That's okay, but I'm not Art, but that's fine. I'll relay the message.
I'm sorry, George. I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm from Riverside, Iowa, and coincidentally, this is the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk. I was wondering if your guest tonight had any information on David Icke, or the Silva Ultramind system, which I am intrigued and also frightened by. I wondered if, what his take on was either one of those.
Well, Nick, you're, of course, aware of our guest, David Icke.
Yeah, I've lectured in forums where David's been there, and you know, I'm familiar with some of his work. You know, he brings up a lot of interesting issues. Some of it, you know, again, I'm a paper kind of guy. So, you know, David doesn't always produce the documents as much as a lot of testimony from people and things like that. On the Silva mind control is another just technique. I mean, there's many, many techniques for controlling mental activity. You know, some of them are cultic, you know, in terms of their development. They're developed to control and manipulate. And remember this little analogy. And again, I wish they had this book back out, because it's from the 80s, was The Mind, the Manipulator, which really draws distinctions between things that are that enhance who you are as an individual and things that take from you. And I think a lot of these cultic or semi-cultic methods of mind control are really designed to take power, not end power. And I think that's the problem with much of it. And quite frankly, a lot of the concern, because when you get into these issues, you're talking about the regulator of what we do and what we are as human beings. And so, you know, caution should be exercised in these areas. And at the same time, I think the rule should always be, if it doesn't enhance human performance by their own free will, we don't do it.
As usual, Nick Begich, thanks for the information, and we'll see you on your next visit to Coast to Coast.
Okay? All right. Always looking forward to it. My best to everybody.
www.earthpulse.com. Well worth going to take a look at Nick Begich's website. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Nick Begich, our guest. Nick, a few weeks ago, I had a guest on who, he claims that aliens are trying to communicate with people in a bad way. And he has invented, and he's darn serious about it, and he's got the, you know, credentials up and down his arm, that he's invented some kind of hat device to cloak people from, and shield people from these signals. Would that work in this case?
You know, I don't know enough about the technology he's developed to really answer that fairly. You know, the thing about it is, I would say this, is if the transmissions are on similar systems, you know, whether they're using radio signals or microwaves or something like this, and it's designed for that, to mitigate that, certainly. But, you know, I have no idea of what particular signals he was trying to block, or how they might be generated, or anything about that. So I couldn't really say. But that kind of idea has been kicked around, you know, by people a lot. You know, is there something that we can individually do? And unfortunately, because of the diversity in which technology can be applied, the answer is probably not. There's not an individual technique, if you will, that will work. One thing that's kind of interesting, though, is when you look at the older materials, the older literature on this subject, they said that on the mass systems, the systems that would affect like large geographic areas, that they would only affect 70% or 80% of the population. Well, that sort of begs the question, well, how come it didn't affect the other 20% or 30%? And there's several possibilities. One is near fields, things that are close to you that actually have a stronger signal that your body will tend to lock onto. And your body will lock onto the strongest signal in its vicinity and kind of ignore much of the other, like you ignore background noise in a crowded room. So strong signals in your proximity that are beneficial signals might, and I say might loudly, might solve some of the problem. The other thing that might be useful, you know, along that same line is the idea that maybe strong systems, in other words, individuals who are healthy and strong individually, aren't as susceptible to external fields because their own signal strength, their own resonant frequency is high enough to mitigate external fields that are small or slight. That's a possibility, and again, a possibility. Developing a technology or a device that will counter every signal that can be carried in, I don't think such a device could be created economically for the average person to ever be able to touch. The real issue is, what do we do the same question could be asked is, what do I do to avoid personally a chemical or biological attack? And some people have done that. They gone out and bought a gas mask. But the vast majority of people go, well, wait a minute. Certain things, there's nothing I can do about it. It's really the broader society. It's a mission of the whole population to do something about it. In this case, regulate. And as we have chemical weapons, as we have biological weapons, we need to regulate these in a way that makes sure that they serve our interest and amplify our values and don't discount them.
Jim writes from California, he might be right here. The practice, he says, even like we do when we mention sponsorship phone numbers and things several times, he says that's subliminal by itself, isn't it?
Well, I mean, everything is, there's two differences. One is persuasive and one is manipulative. And, you know, when you look at communication generally, there's a book, it's not been published in a number of years, called Man the Manipulator. That what it does is compare persuasion versus manipulation. And the distinction they draw is persuasion comes from delivering a lot of information, or hopefully all of the information relevant to making a good decision, you know, so that you can be, you know, able to make that decision. Manipulation is providing only the information necessary to create the outcome you personally desire and forget about the truth or forget about full disclosure. And so much of communication, I mean, if you really think about each communication event, whether it's on this radio broadcast or an interpersonal conversation, isn't it always about that? I mean, isn't it about persuasion?
Sure.
Or manipulation? And isn't it about how much information do you give in a good, lively debate? The idea is to get all the information out. You know, freedom of the press wasn't so much in the beginning about saying whatever you wanted. It was about stimulating the public debate so good public policy could be developed by the average person, so that we would have the kind of discussion that we're having, you know, from the one-page newspapers of the 1700s to talk radio in the 21st century. This is the medium for democracy in the country today, is the idea that we can have this kind of discussion, this kind of dialogue, open up the ideas, and then point out the references and let people go find out for themselves and bring back more information on the next round. So maybe I learned something, and I do all the time, I can assure you, from listeners who send me things all the time. And, you know, this is what democracy is really about fundamentally. It's about communicating ideas, having lively discussion, and making sure at the end of the day, as much information as we can find is out there so the best decision that serves all of our interests can be made.
To the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Josh calling from Syracuse, New York.
Sure, Josh. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk to your guest about the connection between people with schizophrenia and mind control.
He's there listening for you. Go ahead.
I'd like to know the connection between people with schizophrenia and whether or not there's propaganda between the government and mind control.
All right.
Okay, you're asking about schizophrenia. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, schizophrenia is a disorder. There are some lots of chemical treatments, of course, that we've heard about over the years that really dampen some things and get some things in control. The question that comes up often is, you know, the very same symptoms that are experienced by some schizophrenics are the same kinds of symptoms that would be demonstrated by people influenced by these kinds of technologies. So the question, you know, often becomes is, you know, am I a target or am I really experiencing, you know, some other problems? You know, when you look at schizophrenia, there's a paper, and this paper was put together by Anu Mikaela in Finland, who did a study on acupuncture applications for schizophrenics, and actually found an application where certain acupuncture points could be stimulated that would rebalance the chemicals in the body in a similar way to way, you know, these artificial chemicals do, but create a situation where schizophrenia was relatively neutralized in some clients. Now, when I look at the government's interest in schizophrenia, I mean, to solve the problem, and it is a big problem, we get mail from folks all the time that experience these kinds of phenomena and have been diagnosed schizophrenic. I think personally that many of them are schizophrenic. Others I have doubts about. I think there's maybe other things going on. But we're not in a position to sort it out. We just don't have the resources or the equipment. And because of the variety of ways in which things can be created synthetically, there's no way for me to sort that out, nor do I consider that my primary mission right now. I mean, I believe that the first step in solving this problem of mind control is making people aware of what is possible and what is necessary in order to regulate those possibilities.
Well, can it be stopped rather than regulated?
I don't think you're going to stop it, because I think there's too many governments involved today. in developing these technologies. And our government is not going to sit back and say, all right, we're not going to develop the technologies. Where I think our government should spend more of its time is developing countermeasures and making those more readily available to the public. And that's a fair way to develop in this direction if we're going to develop in it at all. I don't believe we should be developing offensive weapon systems in the mind control regime. I think it's fundamentally wrong. I think there's other ways to achieve victories in battles that are justified. Mind control technologies are not the answer, and they violate every human principle that I believe this country and other free countries stand for, which is the idea to think freely.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name's Sarah D'Souza, and we've been experiencing hate crimes in the form of electronic harassment since 9/11. And I had a couple questions for Mr. Begich. It's kind of a three-pronged question. We've been kind of collecting evidence and observing what's been going on, our health symptoms, and we're not sure if we've deduced everything, but there were a couple things we did. We put up corrugated sheeting around our house, and it seemed to alleviate our health symptoms and corrugated metal sheeting and reduce the high temperatures we were seeing in our home. And I wanted to know what your thoughts would be on that. And the next thing was...
Let's do one at a time. Hold on. One at a time, okay?
Sorry.
in terms of shielding, you probably got that set up so that it's grounded out.
Yeah, it was grounded. It was also at an angle. We connected it from the roof of our house to the fence.
Yeah.
And we had it all the way around our house.
Well, I don't know what specifically that might, you know, electric fields, electromagnetic fields will go to ground on something like this.
Okay.
Beyond that, I mean, if you've noticed a perceptible change, that's interesting. It would have been good to get some pre-measurements and then some post-measurements to see what actually was happening.
We did that in terms of the temperature.
Okay.
Like, we saw a 15 to 25 degree temperature between our house and the outside reported temperature. And then when we put up the shielding around our house, it went down and matched the outside reported temperature.
Well, your energy transfer through the metal is pretty efficient comparably. I mean, if you go to a metal door versus a wooden door and put your hand on it, you'll see the difference in the temperature transfer between the substance that it's composed of.
Okay.
So that would could easily explain that. The thing I would look for is, you know, with a trimeter or a meter, looking at electromagnetic fields within the residence before and after and see if there was a perceptible change, because that's something you could see on a meter pretty readily.
Okay. And, we do have a tri-field meter, and we've measured an intermittent 3 milligauss reading around our house and inside of our house.
Okay, you know, and that could be for, you know, from a number of sources, and this becomes difficult, and this is again why, you know, we're not really in the business of sorting it out, because you'd have to bring in, look at the whole spectrum and look at how you can pulse a signal or carry a signal, and then you go, man, the possibilities become enormous and almost endless. So mitigating against each one becomes difficult, and you know what you've done in equalizing your house and your outside temperatures has apparently had a beneficial health effect. I couldn't explain that without a whole lot more information. But, you know, I mean, the transfer of energy through metal versus other substances is just much more efficient.
Next up, Wildcard Line. You're on the air with Nick Begich on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Hello.
Boy, I tell you, with all this onslaught to our brains, we should take care of our brains as well as possible.
We're lucky we still have brains.
You know,
I have a comment about brain cells and then a related question for Nick. I've been doing a lot of research into what we can do to perhaps increase the ability to grow new brain cells because of the aluminum and barium from the chemtrails getting in the brain and lack of sleep and stress. We're all losing brain cells quicker than we should. And the general idea is that we're pretty much born with the brain cells we're going to have, and the parts of the brain where you can grow new brain cells, they don't migrate to parts of the brain where you lose them and need them. And I was wondering, Nick, in your travels, Have you come across anything that increases the chances for neurogenesis, which is the increase in growing new brain cells?
Yeah, actually I have. The Salk Institute in Southern California has done some work in that area, and we published in Earth Rising and Earth Rising 2, I think both we may have mentioned their work, because they had actually developed a way to grow neurons, which was even the more difficult, and to be able to grow brain cells artificially, in fact, even on electronic substrates. So you could actually grow brain tissue on electronic substrates, so you could actually integrate it into machines.
Well, I mean, for our purposes, human beings.
Well, that's the same, you think about it as in the same way artificial limbs are created to, augment someone's loss. The same can be true with this type of technology, which is the interest of that particular institute's research, is to try and figure out a way to repair the brain, basically, to develop techniques to repair brain damage. And the brain's a pretty versatile, organ in terms of being able to work around problems. And this is where things like brain biofeedback come into play. There's other methods for sort of rerouting the way the brain operates a little bit, at least within certain margins, to solve some of the problems that might be created by stroke or by other injuries. But brain research as a subject area is huge. The idea of being able to grow brain cells was something that was demonstrated experimentally, I believe, around 1999 or 2000 in laboratory environments. And the Salk Institute, I believe, was central in that.
The work that everybody has been doing on this technology seems to be pretty dramatic. But is there any other nation ahead of us in this kind of endeavor?
Well, I think if you go back to the early work, the theoretical models that were developed in the former Soviet Union, I think, were way ahead of what we were doing, at least as it appears in the open literature. Even the understanding of electromagnetic fields effects on the human body, back at the end of the Cold War, the Soviets had 1,000 times higher a threshold for human exposures, or I should say lower threshold for human exposures to electromagnetic fields, because they recognize that even small amounts of energy can be quite profound when they interact with the human body. And it's not a matter of everything affecting us. I mean, if you think about all the energy around us today, it's tremendous. It's not the volume, it's the directed energy for a specific effect, and it has more to do with frequency. And if you think about this analogy, and I've used it, I think, before on the program, is a radio station, in between the stations you get only static, and yet when you get resonance, harmony between the transmitter and receiver, then you get a nice clear signal and everyone hears our voice like they are tonight. The same is true in the human body, with every cell, every chemical, every organ, the entire body itself, are all can be influenced by external fields of the right frequency and wavelength. And what you see in the development of these technologies is the greater understanding. As we gain understanding of how these energy fields interact with our physiology, that's where the exploitation for new weapons and the development of new health technologies becomes possible. And the unfortunate part of the health technology side of the equation, that's not part of the military mission, except for dealing with mitigating technologies, things that can solve the problem if it's directed at us.
Let's go to our international line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Patagonia.
Ah, Paraguay, huh?
Indeed.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
What interested me the most was a connection between technology and godship. And I had the Bible hammered into my mind as a child, and I'll never forget it. And it's really cool because I had a structure to judge everything from, and I'm at peace with that. One of the things that came to mind was a couple of times when the nation of Israel was doing battle, God put derision into the minds of the enemy so that they were so confused they began to slay each other. And that brought back a lot of other thoughts about technology, like if a spaceship landed in 607 BCE, they would call it a god. But then again, if Apache helicopter landed in 607 BCE in Israel, they would call it a god also. The idea of our technology putting us in a godship place where we can control at will other people's minds, and then the precedent that's been set up in the Bible, all seem to kind of make sense to me a little bit.
I think you're right on with that.
Absolutely.
And I think, Nick, there could have been some kind of tremendous technology years
Absolutely.
Ago.
Absolutely. I believe that the creation is created under universal laws and rules. And however you look at what God is, that's the discovery for human beings is figuring out what those rules and laws are. And that's the creative capacity of human beings. And our creative capacity is limitless, in my view. And I think that's where the challenge and the precaution lies. Free will is a powerful thing. We need to exercise it wisely.
Back with Final Calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Final segment with Nick Begich. Nick, by the way, the two DVD series, how do people find it, get it?
Oh, for sure. We have a toll-free number I can give you. It's 888-690-1277. Again, that's 888-690-1277. And we've got a special on both of those DVDs. They're an hour and a half video segments. They have complimentary CD-ROMs with them with a lot of the documents we've been talking about tonight. And both of them, freight paid in the U.S., is $35. So it's a really excellent buy.
For the package.
That's right, for both DVDs and both CD-ROMs.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. First-time caller line, you're up. Hi there.
George, hi. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Good. I had just a quick question for you. I was just wondering, you say that there needs to be regulations with as far as these weapons go and everything, the mind control. What's going to stop other countries, even our country, from going ahead and doing it anyway?
Well, I think that, again, our government is well known for doing its own thing, whether we like it or not. I think that but if you set up a regulatory environment, only you do it a little bit differently. In the past, and generally we indemnify public employees from their actions when they act on behalf of the government. I don't think we should do that in this case. I think we should make people fully culpable for what they do. When you do that, people are much less willing to say yes, and I think that's the first step in the right direction. There are a lot of very brilliant, principled people working in programs that are compartmentalized, not really having full knowledge of what their programs do. When those very brilliant people gain full knowledge and it conflicts with their value systems, many of them will move on to other projects and have plenty of options in life. And I think a good discussion, an open discussion, might breed a little bit more of that, where the very good scientists that are doing the work can put it towards more beneficial uses. The other area where I think our government should be very involved is in mitigation technologies that avoid the problem, so that our electronic equipment does have the proper safeguards to screen out these signals that they are very well aware of, that radio broadcasts are protected, and that violations are severely punished and by long and arduous jail terms. And that is the solution, and you create whistleblower mechanisms to hold people accountable. And I think those mechanisms are needed not just in this area, but many of the areas covered on Coast to Coast AM are controversial areas where full disclosure and at least a little more disclosure is certainly in order. And I think most of us would agree the American public is more prepared for the truth than we've been inundated by the lies.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. I appreciate that. And the lies will catch up with everybody eventually.
Eventually it does. With all of this, when I look at technology and people have asked me on these subjects, don't you get a little nervous? Don't you get afraid? And the answer is no, I don't. My wife, who's here with me this evening, would tell you, I've never in all of this work experienced fear as a function of my work life, because I really believe that when you do what you're supposed to be doing in life, things tend to work pretty smoothly. And even with the rough spots, a lot's gained by that. And I think these issues are the big issues of the 21st century. Coast to Coast is one of the few shows that deals with technology as a fundamental area of its work. And as a consequence, more and more people become aware. Things can change. You'd be amazed. Tom Spencer of the European Parliament heard about HARP from someone that heard us on this show, on the Coast to Coast program, back when Art was doing it, back in 95. That individual got our book, read it, marked it all up, sent it to a friend of his who at the time was chairing the Foreign Affairs Committee at that time. He was chairing the Environmental Subcommittee. That was Tom Spencer, and he eventually became chairman of Foreign Affairs and was able to get a resolution passed and some movement headed towards a more positive direction. So I think there's a lot to be said for what every listener hearing this broadcast has the potential of doing, is making a change that will profoundly affect the world. And it may be a very, very small thing by their own measure, but small. There are no small things. My experience tells me that when people act on what they believe to be right and true, amazing things happen, things that are unexpected happen. And that's what we need to be more about, and less about the fear and the worry, and more about doing what we can do within our own individual power about the issues that are important to us, whether it's these issues or others.
Nick, since you brought up HAARP, do you think that has anything to do with this mind control technology?
I think with HAARP at this point, you know, the program manager, John Heckscher, was confronted with that during a video segment, again, by CBC-TV in Canada. And he basically referred to it as a side effect of the technology, something they weren't interested in. From my perspective, because, again, it's a compartmentalized program, it's now shifted over to DARPA from the Navy and the Air Force. You know, DARPA deals with these kinds of programs, and now is when I would expect to see that kind of experimentation take place. I don't think it was ever designed as primarily as a mind control technology. It was designed as a weapon system for a lot of other applications, but as a spinoff, it's a pretty compelling one, and one that has been forecasted since 1969 by the Brzezinskis and J.F. Gordon MacDonald at UCLA and many others as being possible. The possibility is there. Will this administration or the next administration use it for this purpose? That's a good question, and one that I would not be surprised to see the answer, yes, they would, if they felt that it would serve their purposes. I mean, what we've already seen, preemptive warfare, what does that mean? You know, in the advent of speed of light weapons, that's a scary concept if the Chinese happen to be the ones to develop the most powerful weapons first and use that principle of war and apply it against us.
Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick. Hi, everyone else.
Sure.
I have a question about a more benevolent kind of technology, but I think Nick will be knowledgeable about this. I heard mentioned on a documentary, I think on Nova something, and I'm wondering if you could enlighten us where we could find out more about this or explain it more on the spot. And this has to do with a system of multiplying and representing numerals used in Athabascan culture, which enables people to multiply very large numbers very easily and very quickly.
Well, it's interesting. I'm adopted Athabascan, and I don't know about this numbering system. And
could
I work
find
with,
out for us for next time you're on the program?
I'll make some inquiries with some of our elders. I work with Chicoloon Village, which is a traditional tribal government in Alaska. I was their tribal administrator for a number of years, and I currently work a little bit as their planner on a part-time basis for them. And so I'll talk to my clan grandmother and ask her, and I'm sure, in fact, she often listens to the program. Maybe she's even hearing us tonight. So I'll ask her about this, and we'll make the inquiry. And next time I'm on, I hope to have an answer for you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Next up, our next wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Joan from San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah,
and
hi.
I heard a speaker at the Parkinson's Institute conference who said he had done research through NIH funding on controlling trembling, shaking, lack of muscle control, gait, swallowing problems associated with Parkinson's disease through electromagnetic methods of, remote electromagnetic methods of control. And I was at this Parkinson's Institute conference hearing this. I thought, well, you know, that could also apply to perhaps arrhythmia of the heart or epilepsy or paralysis,
right.
Seizures,
right.
Maybe asthmatic breathing problems, even bone growth and osteoporosis, intestinal problems like constipation or whatever. And I was wondering, is there a good source of information on published research? Because apparently it's
yes.
not being published for some reason to a large extent. And I wondered why it's not being published. Why is it being done unpublished?
Well, there's a couple things. The one document I referenced in the very first segment tonight was the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook, which is produced by actually the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, I believe. And it was 1985 is the year. And that's a public record, or it was until, you know, I'm sure it still is. And it was available to us on interlibrary loan, and then we eventually got a copy. And it lays out some of that. If you look up if you just look into electromagnetic field effects, you'll find lots of literature, you know, if you really dig into that subject. And this is very controversial in the medical sciences. And kind of the split between the mathematics and the physicists and the experimental physicists and the bioscientists sort of split in colleges where people had really high math skills. They went into the physics, the things that underlie chemical reactions. The people that had lesser math skills but really good chemistry skills tended to go into life sciences. The idea of energy being a principal player in either causing or affecting health conditions is not something that's readily accepted by most medical practitioners in the West. It is in the East, just because of the nature of their sciences and the development of their science.
But not just energy like yoga or something, but actually instead of putting, say, implanting a pacemaker in the heart, you could use something external, like a little tiny radio, like you have, or something carried in your pocket, and just turn it on, and that would calm your heart or whatever.
Right.
if you were putting
it back in rhythm, or disrupting the rhythm, which is what the military has been working on, is how to create heart attacks in people.
Maybe that's causing, but this is for healing, so maybe that's why you don't see some of it. Maybe
that's
It would mean the person wouldn't have to have drugs.
Right.
And so this Parkinson's Institute work would be very interesting if you could control the symptoms of Parkinson's without having to implant things actually in the brain.
And this is where we think the biggest betrayal of the public trust is, because when the military develops technologies understanding these underlying principles and then withholds them under national security for weapons applications, we have a strong objection to that, because we believe the higher value of that knowledge isn't in figuring out how to kill people more efficiently, but how to solve people's health issues, particularly, where it's American tax dollars being spent for that, for the development of that knowledge. And I think what you see is that the independent institutes that are developing the knowledge in these areas are doing it with a fraction of the funding, and none of the fundamental foundational research has been developed for military applications. And this is, again, a huge betrayal of public trust from my perspective.
East of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm in Grand Prairie, Texas, and I've heard of these things, and I've seen them on the Internet. They're called the Gwyn Towers and Ground Wave Emergency Network. And I've read that those are used in conjunction with chemtrails to manipulate weather and for mind control.
Yeah, I really couldn't. I know the Gwen system exists, and I'm familiar with it going back to the very beginnings of when we did our first research on HARP. And, people have tried to bring correlations or connections between the two. The unfortunate thing is I've never seen the documents to support those connections. And George will tell you, I'm a document kind of guy. If you've got it in the paper form where I can see that the sources are good and solid, where I'm willing to go public with them. And this is a big responsibility. When you take these issues public, I believe it's not just informing folks, but you're hoping people act on the knowledge in responsible ways, and that requires a lot of responsibility on the researcher's side. So I'm not so quick to just jump into the middle of the latest controversy unless there's really good supportive evidence. And on that particular tie-in, I have not seen the evidence, although it may be out there. I just haven't seen it.
Okay, well, out here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Yeah.
I've noticed the chemtrails for about 3 years now, and I talked to George a couple months ago. They called me the chemtrail poet.
Okay.
And I'd like to give you another one, George, if I could. But anyhow, since the chemtrails started, they've built a lot of, it looks like, transmission towers with these big round white drums on them. And somebody told me that those were used for microwave transmission.
They are. We have them. We have probably one of the most modern microwave communication systems in the world in Alaska, just because of the remoteness of the place. And we have them everywhere. We have since the late 60s when they put in the first ones.
Okay, well, Dallas-Fort Worth is really remote, but, I mean, they're everywhere. And then there's cell phone towers where you'll see clusters of them. They'll be, 15 poles within a couple blocks of each other, and a lot of times you could hear these high-frequency tones through the air, and not everybody hears them. I hear them, my daughter hears them, a couple friends hear them, and real high-pitched, so the dogs hear them. They start barking.
Okay, that's not unusual, actually. There was a study done by the University of New Mexico, and it was insisted upon by a New Mexico U.S. representative who was researching what was called then the Taos hum, and still is referred as that. And the thing is, it doesn't just occur in New Mexico. It occurs all over the world. And if you go back to the invention of radio, there was a small segment of the people that said, hey, the thing is driving me crazy, when they turned on the first radios back in Europe in the turn of the last century. There are some individuals, it appears, by the research, that 1 to 3% of the population are sensitive to electromagnetic fields and perceive that some of these signals as actual sound. And the reason they know that they're man-made is they're coherent or rhythmic. They're not the kind of sounds or signals that nature generally makes. So, you know, there is something going on there. With the cell towers, there's some great work that has been done in Europe on the subject. We have a great article on our website on cell phones, and cell phone towers is sort of the other half of it. And there are serious issues there. George Carlo, who did the work for the industry, actually, $25 million study on cell phones, published a book by the same name, Cell Phones, that talks all about the problems that he uncovered and the cautions that he tried to make to the industry that they ignored him completely.
Oh, they weren't too happy with his results.
No, not at all happy. And you know, he is one of my heroes. Here's a guy, I've never met him, but I can tell you, anyone that can take and do a $25 million study and get done and go back to the industry that paid for that study and say, sorry, guys, it's not like you hoped it would be. That's my kind of guy.
Yeah, that's guts.
First, that takes a lot.
First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yep.
Hi. Art, I love your show. This is Teresa from Riverside, Iowa.
That's okay, but I'm not Art, but that's fine. I'll relay the message.
I'm sorry, George. I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm from Riverside, Iowa, and coincidentally, this is the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk. I was wondering if your guest tonight had any information on David Icke or the Silva Ultramind system, which I am intrigued and also frightened by. I wondered what his take on was either one of those.
Well, Nick, you're, of course, aware of our guest, David Icke.
Yeah, I've lectured in forums where David's been there, and you know, I'm familiar with some of his work. You know, he brings up a lot of interesting issues. Some of it, you know, again, I'm a paper kind of guy, so, you know, David doesn't always produce the documents as much as a lot of testimony from people and things like that. On the Silva mind control is another just technique. I mean, there's many, many techniques for controlling mental activity. You know, some of them are cultic, you know, in terms of their development. They're developed to control and manipulate. And remember this little analogy. And again, I wish they had this book back out because it's from the 80s, was The Mind, the Manipulator, which really draws distinctions between things that are that enhance who you are as an individual and things that take from you. And I think a lot of these cultic or semi-cultic methods of mind control are really designed to take power, not end power. And I think that's the problem with much of it. And quite frankly, a lot of the concern, because when you get into these issues, you're talking about the, you know, the regulator of what we do and what we are as human beings. And so, you know, caution should be exercised in these areas, and at the same time, I think the rule should always be, if it doesn't enhance human performance by their own free will, we don't do it.
As usual, Nick Begich, thanks for the information, and we'll see you on your next visit to Coast to Coast. Okay?
All right, always looking forward to it. My best to everybody.
www.earthpulse.com. Well worth going to take a look at Nick Begich's website.